iFaith 41. We're going to be looking at the book of Philippians in this lesson and the next. And this message is called Chains and Dogs. I'll explain that in a moment. The church in Philippi was established by the Apostle Paul in Acts chapter 16. Much of the ancient city still remains. For example, the theater. It's a great place to visit. I've even had the privilege of speaking there. Many people will tell you that the theme of Philippians is joy. And that word does appear a number of times. But I don't think that's the theme. Others would say it's Christ. Of course, Christ is the theme of the whole Bible, and especially the New Testament books. So I'm not sure about that one, even though, of course, Jesus is mentioned many times. I think the focus of Philippians has to do with our personal selves, and particularly when we have too much of it. It's selfishness. And we're going to take that up in the second message on Philippians, but not today. Philippians is one of the four prison epistles, along with Colossians and Philemon and Ephesians. Many people think it was written by Paul when he was in prison in Rome. And that's possible, though there's also a good case to be made for his imprisonment in Ephesus, and even others would say in Caesarea. All of these are possibilities. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. Firstly, let's talk about the chains. In Philippians 1, Paul is clearly in prison. I want you to know, brothers and sisters, he says in 1:12, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. As a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. And because of my change, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. There's something good coming out of something bad. He's in prison, but that increases the boldness, maybe the gratitude, of the Christians. Not all of them, but many of them. That's a great thing. But not everyone likes Paul. He continues, "It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so out of love, knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing they can stir up trouble for me while I am in chains. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached, and because of this, I rejoice." So the Apostle Paul has some rivals, and he's saying that these people are preaching out of selfish ambition. There are others that Paul is aware of, whom he commends. They preach out of goodwill. But both groups are preaching Christ. He doesn't denounce the first group, that is those who speak out of envy and rivalry, the ones who want to stir up trouble for Paul. Paul is in a compromised position. It's not as easy to defend himself or to meet and clarify his message, and they're taking advantage of him. They're rivals. How are they causing Paul trouble? Well, I can suppose there's slander. Certainly, there were attempts to minimize or discredit his ministry. Probably competing and comparing, maybe even some sheep stealing. That is, recruiting people who followed Paul to become part of their group instead. Well, Paul is not happy with that, but he doesn't say, "It's impossible to be against me and for Christ." As long as Jesus is preached, that's the important thing. Paul also is confident that these chains will not end in death. He's willing to die. One of the most famous verses in Philippians 1:21, "For me to live is Christ, to die is gain." He's willing to die. And he says that could be good, but it's even more fruitful if I don't die. And he expresses his confidence in the end of chapter 1 that he will in fact be delivered. That not that he'll be delivered and ultimately vindicated by God. No, but released from prison. Well, in addition to imprisonment and some Christian brothers giving Paul a headache, he also contended with Jewish opponents, possibly Jewish Christian, but certainly Jewish. And in Philippians 3, there are many hints that these are Jews, and I'll explain that in a moment. But I think these opponents are not the same people as in chapter 1. He begins in verse 2, 3-2, watch out for those dogs, those evildoers, those mutilators of the flesh. Okay, this is a different tone. It's a different attitude. And what he says in chapter 3 is that these people are doing evil. Those in chapter 1 who opposed Paul were still doing good. They're doing good because they're preaching Christ. So these are different groups. And I would say that Paul was dogged by the circumcision group. We read more about that circumcision party and how destructive they can be in Titus chapter 1. You'll have to do that on your own. Well, dogs, that word has a very negative connotation. As in Matthew 7:6, don't give dogs what is holy. Don't throw pearls to pigs. In most of the modern world, as in most of the ancient world, calling someone a dog was an invitation to start a fight. Dogs were unclean. They hunted in packs. You see them today in some cities around the world. Now, I'm not saying there were no pets. We love our dog. We love our Bernese Mountain Dog. There were pets. There were domestic dogs. Jesus speaks of the puppies underneath the table in Matthew 15. But in general, dog's a very heavy word. And these people were certainly causing more trouble for Paul even than the envious Christians of chapter 1. So let's read now chapter 3. Watch out for those dogs, those evildoers, those mutilators of the flesh. That word mutilators of the flesh is like the word circumcision. Paul is playing with the word. He says, for it is we who are the circumcision, we who serve God by his Spirit, who boast in Christ, and who put no confidence in the flesh. So putting confidence in the flesh here has kind of a double meaning. It's the flesh relying on myself, my power, but also confidence in circumcision. That is, in the removal of some of the flesh from the body of a male. And he says, we are the circumcision. So he's not encouraging circumcision. He's saying that real circumcision, you can see this explained by Paul in Romans 2. We see it back in Jeremiah 4. But real circumcision is a circumcision of the heart. And as Paul is going to say, no way did these people understand the Torah, the law of Moses, better than Paul. No way. He says, well, I myself have reasons for such confidence. If someone else thinks they've got reasons to put confidence in the flesh, I have more. And then he gives a little bit of his resume. I mean, he's a Jew who can trace his pedigree, his lineage, back to Benjamin. In fact, Saul was named after Israel's first king, Saul, Shaul. He was a Pharisee. I mean, this is an elite level of training, education, commitment. The circles in which Paul moved before his conversion were amazing. He was trained by a very prominent rabbi, and he was zealous. So zealous, he persecuted the church. So he's saying, don't you dare tell me you understand Judaism and you're committed, because I was more committed. And yet he continues with some shocking words. Having listed, enumerated things that would make most people very, very proud, he says, I consider them garbage that I may gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through the faithfulness of Christ, the righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faithfulness. I want to know Christ, yes, to know the power of his resurrection, participation in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. Now, when Paul talks about the law, the righteousness from the law, I don't think he's talking about legalism. Most Protestants see that word law in Galatians or Romans or here, and they think, oh yeah, that's when you're trying to earn your salvation. I don't think so. I mean, they may be connected. But normally when Paul says law, he's referring to the law, the Jewish law, the Torah, the law of Moses. And Paul is not trying to have a righteousness of his own based on the Torah, but in Christ. And it's through the faithfulness of Christ. Some translations will say faith in Christ or faith of Christ. One scholar says it should be allegiance, that kind of faithfulness of Christ. I think that's true. They're connected. Real power is resurrection power, the power of the Spirit. It's not a power that comes from keeping the hundreds of regulations of the Torah. Now, listen to these next verses, 17 to 19, and see if you're not convinced. He's still talking about his Jewish opponents. Join together in following my example, brothers and sisters, and just as you have us as a model, keep your eyes on those who live as we do. For, as I have often told you before, and now tell you again, even with tears, many live as enemies of the cross of Christ. These are definitely not the people of chapter 1. Their destiny is destruction. Their God is their stomach, and their glory is in their shame, or their genitals. That's a common euphemism in Judaism. Their mind is set on earthly things. So why would I say these are Jews? Well, he's talked about the law. He talks about glorying in the shame. That is, he's referring to circumcision, the glory, you know, boasting in, hey, I'm circumcised. I'm a good follower of Moses. And even says their God is their stomach. I used to think he was talking about gluttons, people who love food too much. I don't think so. I think he's talking about the kosher laws. Going back to Leviticus 11, the foods that a faithful Jew is permitted to eat, the clean foods opposed to the unclean. And Paul will say here and in other letters, it's not about what you eat. You know, Jesus said the same thing. It's what comes out of you more than what goes into you. So he's identified a group who are keeping kosher. They're putting stock in circumcision, and they're trying to follow the law. So they sound actually a lot like the false teachers in Galatians, and we had two video sermons on them earlier. Much more like them than about the Jewish Christians, the Pharisee party of Christians in Acts 15, who just wanted the Gentiles to become more Jewish culturally. Well, chains, envious disciples, dogs. It's a lot of challenge. Paul's facing a lot here. He's in prison. He's got genuine Christians, some of whom like him, some don't, are trying to undermine him. And then you've got the Jews who are pushing circumcision. He calls them dogs. But how does he respond? Well, I think we see. In chapter 1, he puts his faith in the Lord. The Lord will deliver him. Towards the ill-motivated brothers, grace. Christ is being preached. That's a good thing. No one gets it exactly right. No one will fully understand us. It's okay. He's gracious. And the third response, alarm. When it comes to the dogs, the circumcision, it's alarm. It's not neutrality. It's not tolerance. He regards the truly dangerous promoters of the law, circumcision, as a great threat to the church. So finally, when we are stressed, let's think of Philippians. Let's think of Paul. When we are pressed by trying circumstances or trying people, when we're opposed or undermined by enemies of the cross, let's strive to imitate Paul, to have first, faith in the Lord, second, grace towards others, and third, when required, alarm, not neutrality, particularly when it comes to dangerous false teachers. And our next message from Philippians, we're going to return to that theme of self, self-focus, and I've entitled that message, Less of Self and More of Thee. But for now, I hope you got something out of this message. Message number 41 in the iFaith series, Chains and Dogs. Have a good day.